The recordings have started. I'd like to inform participants today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the IGO-NGO Acute Device Protection Mechanisms Working Group call on the 19th of November 2014. On the call today, we have Peter Reinfort, Gary Campbell, Mason Cole, George Kirikos, Paul Patterfield, Val Sherman, David Maher, Jim Bykoff, Christine Durain, Paul Keating, David Heasley, and Phil Corwin. We have received apologies from Osvaldo Novoa and Laurie Shulman. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, Amy Bivens, Terry Agnew, and myself, Matthew Peregrine.
Excuse
I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Excuse me, Mr. Philip Corwin is joined.
Okay, then. Patrick Reinfort here. Any statement of interest updates? I see no hands up. Good. So let's proceed to the next point, updates on action items from the last working group call. And I see the notes here on the screen. I'll leave it to the staff first.
Thank you, Peter. This is Mary Wong from ICANN staff, and on behalf of my other colleagues supporting this working group, some of whom are on this call, we just wanted to give you folks an update on some of the matters arising from the call last week, and you see that that's in the notes and action items document up on the screen that was also sent to everybody a few days ago. So pleased to report that the proposed IGO small group that was discussed by the board and the GNSO at the Los Angeles meeting, we are told, has been formed. And as a result, action item number two, the specific questions to be sent to the IGO small group, we have started coordinating with our colleagues who support the board and the new GTLD program committee to make sure that these are sent to the IGO small group in such a way that we would hopefully get a fairly quick and productive response. Action item number three, I think, was a question more for the working group because, as was noted last week, several working group members do have contacts with individual IGOs who may or may not be observers of the GAC, for example. So this may be an action item that working group members may want to take further or discuss at some point. On action item number four, we've also proceeded to speak to our legal department to make sure that the research that was done for the last working group is something that they can provide an update on with regard to the usefulness to our working group of the six-tier protections and how those are translated or implemented in the different jurisdictions they studied. We've also talked to them about coordinating this with some of the research output coming out of our subgroup B, which is to do the individual trademark searches for the IGOs on the GAC list, and we want to make sure that those jurisdictions correspond to the ones that were on the previous survey. Finally, on our end, we have asked for the update to the GNSO Council to be on the next meeting agenda. And we have also written to the GAC chair in part of our invitation to the GAC member on this group to participate in our face-to-face meeting on action item number five. So we've done as much as we could in the week that's gone past on the action items. We will come back to the group as soon as we get responses, and, of course, we'll continue coordinating with our colleagues in the other departments. The only other update that we have on the staff site for now, before I hand it over to Mason, is to let everyone know that our working group has a liaison to the GNSO Council that was appointed at the last council meeting, and it is Susan Kawaguchi, who is the new counselor from the business constituency, and I believe Susan will be joining some of our calls as well as our face-to-face meeting in Singapore in February. So that's it from the staff end, and over to you, Mason.
Thanks, Mary. Mason Cole speaking. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. Well, good morning. I don't have much of an update except on the issue of the questions to the GAC that were posed by the by this working group. I have those questions in hand, and they'll be pushed to the GAC. One of the issues that has been a, I'm getting some feedback on my line. Just a moment. One of the issues that I've had is, in my role as the liaison, is finding someone on the GAC side to receive the comments and coordinate with the GAC to help get the questions answered. I think that problem has now been solved. So, so today, in fact, I'll be posing those questions for clarification by the GAC, and hopefully we'll receive a response in a timely way. But I will be working with the GAC to elicit that response. And I think that's pretty much all I have for an update for this group.
Mason, can I ask a question? This is Jim Bykoff.
Sure, Jim.
Who are the questions going to?
We're going to start with Peter Nettlefold from Australia and see if he can coordinate a small group to work with. He's pretty responsive. But in,
okay,
in
I was only going to suggest perhaps you think about also about Mark Carvel in London, who I know is pretty much up to date on these issues.
Yes, thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, Peter here.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Wants to say that seems to be a good start, and also good initiative to start the contact of setting up, even if it's not a formal group, but at least an informal group to discuss with in a fairly early stage. So that's very good. Did anyone want to comment on this?
Peter, could I ask a question to Mary? It's Jim Bykoff again. Mary, who are the IGOs who are going to be in this small group? Is there information that maybe you could circulate on that so we don't, if we contact other members, we're not going to have any conflict with the group that you're going to be sending things to?
Thanks, Jim. This is Mary. That's a great question. I'm afraid I don't have the exact information on hand, but I will find out. I would imagine that a number of the IGO participants from the last working group would be in that small group. And the reason I say that is because, Jim and others, as you know, the small group was set up not specifically just as a resource for our current working group, but primarily to continue to work out the outstanding issues to be reconciled between the GAC and the GNSO on the prior working group's recommendations. So I would think that some of the IGO participants from that phase, which would include WIPO and a couple of others, would likely be on that group as well. So like I said, I will find out. That said, though, I don't know that it would necessarily, you know, be difficult or for folks like Jim and others to speak to IGOs with whom they have contacts. And so I will try and provide that information. But, Jim, I think that would be good for you and others to continue those conversations you've been having. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks. Better here again. And then yes, Mary, I see your hands up.
Yes, Peter, and I'm sorry, I think we just had a question or comment from Imran in the Adobe Connect. So I thought maybe I'd take the opportunity, and Mason, jump in if I'm, you know, not saying it as completely or as correctly as you would. I think what you were talking about is not so much a formal GAC representative, but that while we have a liaison, which is yourself, between the GAC and the GNSO, the difficulty, because this is the first time that we're using this liaison function, is that you don't have a counterpart on the GAC side. So in speaking to Peter and maybe to Mark Carvel, I would assume that it's not so much that they're the official GAT representatives that serve the same function as you do, but it's simply your initial contact points with the GAC.
Peter here again. I think it's a good start. It was a couple of us that discussed with Peter Netterfold at the last ICANN meeting, and he actually said that he appreciated to work close together with us and to discuss, even if it's no formal official decisions, but to discuss specific points, and that they have actually a group that deals with these kind of issues already. So this is accepted by GAC, and it's also a good way to continue and to have, as I said, to have early inputs that we can work around and work with. Okay, then I'll move forward to the main issue of today's call, the request for input from GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, and also from other SOACs. And well, I hope you have all seen it. We have already got some comments, and Phil offered to collect notes from the meeting today. I just wanted to say initially that I saw George Kirkus comment, and you're perfectly right. We need to add some comments on how we come to this conclusion. So that's definitely something that that will be added to this document. What I'm talking about there is before we reach the first question, what's right now in this draft, just briefly said that first we wish to inform you that the working group has reached a majority decision that there is no principal reason to consider INGOs as a special category of protected organization for purposes of the specific task for which it was chartered in this PDP. And the question from that is, what is the view of your stakeholder group constituency on excluding INGOs from further consideration in this PDP? So I think we, if I initially go through just the questions here and see if there are any further proposal to the question as such and the initial presentation of the question. And I'll leave it to yes, Phil.
Yes, Peter, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah. Are we at the stage now to offer specific comments on the letter?
Sorry, what did you mean?
Are we now at the point in this discussion where individuals can indicate how they would like the letter to be amended? And again, I've offered to take notes on ideas from others, but if we're at that point, I want to lead off with a few comments on edits I would like to make.
Yeah. So I plan.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, going down to the, you know, the opening's fine, but going down to the third paragraph, we need, and we need to decide whether it's in the body of the letter or in an attachment, explain how we reached the majority decision that there's no need to give further consideration to INGOs, and I think rather than asking an open-ended question, what's your view, I think we should be more specific, saying, do you have any, does your stakeholder or constituency have any objections to this decision, where if we don't get something back, the implication is that they haven't replied, they don't have a problem. I think we want to, you know, use this as an opportunity to both explain and get some kind of consent moving forward. I don't want people to be silent and then show up 2 or 3 months from now informing us they have a problem with it. So I'd like to be a little more specific with the question. In the 2 more paragraphs down, where it starts off, one of the requirements under the UDFA and URS, and then it says, what would be the basis? I think we need to add in Article 6 here, because, I mean, we haven't found anything else that would be the basis for rights other than trademark rights for IGO, so I think we need to mention that in there. And then on the next one, on sovereign immunity, at least based on the telegram that George found for how the U.S. treats protection of Article 6 tier rights in the United States, I think, like the language would say, this may prejudice the status of an IGO as enjoying sovereign immunity. I think we need to be more open-ended and say we're exploring whether there is, in fact, widespread sovereign immunity, and that we're looking at how other countries treat protection of Article 6 tier rights in their own jurisdictions.
Which one was that?
That is the paragraph that starts one of the requirements under the UDFP and URS, and then it's the one afterwards. Excuse me. So next one, a specific problem facing IGO is the requirement to agree to submit to jurisdiction. I think this paragraph too much presumes that we've accepted the validity of the sovereign immunity issue. I think our inquiry is more open-ended at this point. We found that in the United States, at least, the U.S. does not recognize any sovereign immunity. In fact, it requires IGOs who want to protect their Paris Convention rights to register with Patent and Trademark Office and to bring a private civil action in U.S. courts if they believe infringement has occurred in the U.S., and that because of that, we're exploring how other nations do it. I think the way it's worded accepts the sovereign immunity claim, and actually that's something we're actively exploring. We haven't made a decision yet, because that would be the major reason for looking at an entirely new curative rights process. The next paragraph, nominal cost, I think we need to note that it's, we want their their input on whether they view the current UDRP and URS fees as nominal, but we also want to note in the letter that we neither have been asked to under the resolution, nor do we have the power to create any subsidy mechanism if the cost is not bearable by certain IGOs. And I'll stop there. The rest goes into the other issues that are in the charter that we're charged with looking at. I think an idea that kind of changes in tone and additional background information that I think need to be in this letter to make it fully informative to the other SOs and ACs, and to get better feedback from them. And I'll stop talking at that point and see if others have comments on this.
It's Jim Bykoff. I would like to make a comment, if I may.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Peter. I agree with George's comment earlier this morning, and also with some of what Phil has proposed. So I think what I'd like to suggest is, since I haven't had a chance really to make my comments. If somebody, if Phil maybe, because he has some major changes, would like to maybe send around a draft with his changes, which I think also will address George's changes, and maybe we could set a deadline for folks providing written comments so that we could get this thing moving along.
Yeah, but I think that's a good thing to deal with it, and that's also what we plan to do is to get some initial comments today, and just to come to that point briefly on the agenda. And we, I presume that we'll decide not to have a meeting next week. So instead, I urge you to all to study this this topics and the questions, and to send us comments, so that I don't know if what kind of final date we should set up, but it would of course be good to have something by, let's say, Friday next week. Should give us enough time to send in our comments, or even earlier if you think that's that would be decent. Yes, Katie.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you, Peter. My concern here is the response date overall, not the response for our comments, which I think makes sense sometime next week. But January 2nd is a horrible time. Most people's offices are closed for a week. Stakeholder groups are largely offline and silent at that time. I really think it should be at least a week later. Otherwise, I think we're just going to get people asking for extensions that we'll have to grant anyway. January 2nd is just a tough time. Everybody in the world's on vacation then. So my proposal would be January 9th. Does that screw anything up? Thanks.
Thanks, Katie. Just counting on our own local vacation times here in Scandinavia, but I mean from December 13th, when we celebrate the Santa Lucia and then pass on to Christmas and New Year, I think you're fully right that there will be some weeks where we cannot actually get any inputs. So I don't know if, Mary, do you have any good proposal of a specific new date for this?
Petta, this is Mary. Thanks for the question. I was just about to respond to George's question in the chat. The PDP manual prescribes a minimum of 35 days. So we looked at that period, and we considered the holiday period, and the fact that, as George mentioned, that we may have a meeting in early January. So we understand that 2nd January is difficult, but we just put it in there just to try to get the feedback, as we've gotten from Kathy and others. So from the staff perspective, there's no issue with extending it to the 9th or whenever. It's just the understanding that clearly that would impact what we discuss and when. But if, as Kathy noted, more likely than not, we wouldn't have anything back much by the 2nd anyway, that's probably a reason to extend and then decide whether we want to have a meeting on the 7th or to discuss something else at that meeting.
Thanks. Peter, again, I think it's too early to cancel January 7th meeting. It's good to have it on the agenda, and I presume that there are other at least loose scraps that we could follow up and decide upon. And hopefully we'll have got some comments that we may have the possibility to discuss. But if we can make the deadline extended by another week. I think that would be good. Yes, Phil?
Yes. I think on that, the two choices really boil down to extend. The second is a Friday. I mean, New Year's Day is Thursday, so I think most people are just going to take Friday off. The second's not going to work. The question is whether we extend it to the 6th, which is the following Tuesday, assuming we'll probably have a call on Wednesday the 7th, or extend it to the 9th. But then that gives us a few more days to consider that for a call the following week on the 14th. So it's not a big difference either way. I'm willing to go with whatever the group consensus is on this. But the second definitely doesn't work.
Phil, Jim Bykov, I'd go for the 9th.
Yeah, Pedro here. I agree. Anybody that thinks that the 9th is not a good idea? So then let's change it to the 9th, and then perhaps we can... if Mary, yes, I see your hands up. Just wanted to add to you before you reply. If there is a possibility maybe to send out a reminder early in January, so at least there will be a few days behind that to for those groups that may have forgotten to make their to finalize their comments. Yes, Mary.
Actually, Peter, that was exactly what I was going to suggest, that if we extend the deadline to the 9th, what staff will do is send a brief email reminder to all the chairs, maybe 5 days or a week before that, noting that ICANN actually is officially closed for business the week after Christmas, but there is such a thing as email, so the staff will make sure that that reminder is sent out. Thanks.
Thanks, Maria. Peter here again. Then we have decided on that. I had just one more comment on the face that starts with a specific problem facing IGOs is the requirement on the UDRP and URS. I think it may be better for us to not in that phase already consider it as a problem, but maybe reword it as something that is the comment on the conclusion from IGOs that this is a problem, and then still have the question as it is. I don't have the specific wording on that yet in my head, but what do you say about that? Any comments? Okay, I see no hands up there, so I'll send out my proposed changes to that, and during the next days. Okay. Well done. Any other comments on these topics? Yes, Mary.
Hi, Peter. Sorry, that's me again, Mary. And looking at Paul and Kathy's comments in the Adobe chat, we don't know how many IGOs have complained or to who, including to ICANN. I think what we need to bear in mind is that this specific issue was called out by the GAC in at least one, if not more, of its communiques. So as Petter was rephrasing, this is certainly an issue that has been brought up via the GAC by the IGOs, and in addition, this was one of the issues that was scoped in the issue report prior to the initiation of our PDP. So it's been under discussion for some time. So while I can't answer the specific question, I would say that this is clearly an issue that has occupied the GAC as well as one of the factors that led the GNSO Council to agree to initiate this PDP a few months ago.
Thanks, Maya, for that clarification. Peter here. I take that as a support to rephrase this question and the presentation of the problem as such. But of course, it's also important for us to get inputs on it. But perhaps not stating it as it is a problem, but that it is something that IGOs has raised as a possible problem. And as I said, still keep the question so that we can get some inputs. Okay. And, as you see, apart from this specific questions, we also, of course, welcome input on the other topics, and we have a short list of some specific ones. Are there any other topics or questions any one of you consider good to add in order to get inputs for our proceeding work, or shall we stick with this draft as it is? A suggestion about that. Yes, Phil?
Peter, if others don't have specific suggestions for edits to the draft right now, I will work on a revision, and I would ask that anyone, I'll get that to the group before the end of the week, and we'll have till the end of next week to get feedback on the revised draft and make it adopt the final version, so we'd be sending it out early the week following the coming week, next week. But if no one has specific comments now, but has things they would like to change or wording they'd like to add, I'd ask that people just email those to me so that I can incorporate as much as possible in the revision that I circulate, so it's not just my ideas, but ideas from you and other members of the working group on how this letter should be edited. And so I just wanted to note that and hope that folks will, if they don't have suggestions now, we'll get them to me in the next day or so we can circulate a revised draft that's as comprehensive as possible by the end of the week.
Thanks. That sounds good. Mary?
Thanks, Peter, and thanks, Phil. Phil, I'll email you these notes just so you have them at hand as you edit. But what I did want to bring up to the group is once we send out this letter, which has currently been drafted as directed to GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, as I noted previously, this is a mandatory step in the PDP. It's in the PDP manual that we have to reach out to GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies at an early stage. It is not mandatory that we do the same for the other supporting organizations and advisory committees, like the CCNSO, the GAC, the ALAC, and so forth. However, it is fairly common practice, and so the question I had for this group was whether and when you would like to do the same for the other SOs and ACs. The staff suggestion would be that you might as well, knowing that obviously whether or not we get any responses does depend a lot on the nature of the issue and whether that is something that another ICANN supporting organization or advisory committee feels is within its remit or within its interest to respond. So that's the first general question. I did have a more specific question about the GAC, and this is because we are reaching out to the GAC as well as individual observers and members of the GAC in multiple ways at the moment. You know, we have Mason trying to advance a discussion on the GAC's Los Angeles communique for one thing, and we have questions to the IGO small group, which necessarily will also involve discussion with some GAC members on the other hand. So where the GAC is concerned specifically, it may be that we might want to hold off on sending them this request or at least rephrasing in a different way so as to avoid, you know, confusion or deluge. But that's two separate questions. So first, the general one on reaching out to all the other SOs and ACs, and secondly, more specifically, how we should deal with the GAC in that case. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. Phil?
Yes. I think on providing a courtesy copy to the other SOs and ACs, excluding the GAC, just to let them know that this group is moving forward and where the direction we're heading in, I don't have a problem with that, particularly that's kind of the practice, even though it's not required. I think the way to get this letter to the GAC is kind of hand-delivered through Mason with whoever he's liaisoning with over there. I'm afraid if this letter hits the whole GAC, particularly with the communique they put out in L.A., that it's going to be counterproductive, that they that it should be handled in a more personal way than just dropping a letter on the GAC and having it circulate among members. So those are my thoughts on proceeding going forward. Welcome others' views.
Thanks, Holly. Yeah, Pedro, I agree that I don't see any problem to extend the group as suggested to get comments. I suggest we do it with the same timelines, just in order to get so many inputs as possible. Okay, then. I see no...
Peter?
Hands up. Yep.
Jim Bykoff again. On the GAC approach, I understand that Mason's going to contact Peter Nettlefold and possibly Mark Carvel. From the perspective of procedure, would it be important to copy in the new head of the GAC, the chair of the GAC, Thomas Schneider from Switzerland?
Yeah, Peter, I think so. It'd be good to so that he's well aware of what's going on and also can assist in asking other GAC members to work on this. And also maybe good to do it just on a formality reasons, so that he's also have all the information on what's going on. Okay, then. We're talking about the next steps. We'll see a new draft and get all of our inputs during next week. We have already discussed this, but I think we can formally decide that we cancel the next week's meeting and instead working on finalizing our comments. And Then perhaps again, if Mary, if you could give us just a short update on our full day in Singapore, the status of that.
Sure, and thanks to everyone who have responded one way or the other. It would be good to get further responses, again, one way or the other, as to whether or not you are planning to participate in that full-day session. I wanted to repeat again that this is not the same as the normal or regular community session that many GNSO working groups would hold during the ICANN meeting. We would probably schedule one of those during the ICANN week after consulting with the co-chairs. So this is a separate meeting, and as we've noted before, it's scheduled to take place on Friday, February 13th, for a full day. We have already written to the different GNSO stakeholder groups to ask them to select or nominate participants from amongst the working group members to participate, and we're getting some responses back. So as of now, I think we are going to have a group of at least 10 people and hopefully more on the ground in Singapore from various different groups and representing different interests. We will also have, as I noted previously, full remote participation activities. And thank you for those who aren't able to join us in Singapore but have confirmed that they will be participating remotely. In discussions with the working group chairs earlier this morning, and as a reminder, this is a pilot project started by the GNSO Council. We are the second working group to be selected for this project, and the idea is to facilitate effective outcomes of working group discussions, especially for the more sticky issues. So one of the options is to use a professional facilitator, and that was supposed to be done in the first pilot in LA, but unfortunately the professional facilitator we had fell ill. So Petter and Phil think that it would be a very good idea for our working group to go ahead using a professional facilitator. So all this is to say thank you for letting us know if you're coming. Please do continue to let us know if you are able to decide. And thirdly, this is going to be a different meeting in terms of format as well from the regular working group meetings, and we will keep you further updated with details to come. Thanks, Petter.
Thanks, Mary. And I saw Imran's question about our working group members will be supportive for this face-to-face meeting. I think you got an reply for that from Mary.
Just to reiterate, Petter, the only funding that we have for this pilot project, because this is a special budget request, I think many people are familiar with the ICANN procedure, where if you want to try, if you have a specific project, you have to apply under a special budget funding request, and this is what the council did last year. So there's only a fixed sum available spread across the three ICANN meetings, and as I said, we are one of the groups selected. So the only funding available is for hotel nights, one or two, depending on the number of participants per stakeholder group. So two things. If a working group member wishes to attend and needs support, that support that we can provide out of this budget is only limited to hotel nights. That has to be allocated through your stakeholder group. Secondly, if you need additional funding on top of that, that is not something that comes out of our budget. You would have to, again, apply to your stakeholder group because each stakeholder group does have travel allocations for each ICANN meeting. So it really is an individual stakeholder group's decision as to whether and who to nominate, as well as the level of support they would get, whether it would be limited to the hotel nights for this project or whether the group can kick in something else as well. So I hope that's clear.
Thanks, Mary. I would just find a question. I know we have, when you formed initially, there was a specific number of, as I understood it, physical participants that was needed in order to actually keep this full day on the agenda. So 10 people so far, is that enough, or are we still unsure if it will be still at, as I said, the Friday directly after I can?
Peter, this is Mary again, and that's a good question. In fact, that was one of the reasons why we wanted to get the numbers in early. We talked about it, you know, amongst the organizers and so forth, and we've realized that it really does depend not on numbers, as in how many people on the ground or remotely, but on the quality of the discussion. And we as staff feel that as long as there is an adequacy of the different groups that are represented physically or remotely, and as long as the participants are ones who have been active for the most part in the substantive discussions leading up to that face-to-face, that it can be a very productive meeting. And from what we've seen, it does look like it's lining up to be something like that. So chances are we'll have more than 10 folks in the room and a few remotely. And from what I can see, a lot of the participants are people who have been active contributors as well as regular attendees. So from the staff side, we're very hopeful that this will be a successful day, because we do recognize that it is an extra day for everybody, whether you're in Singapore or not.
Thanks, Mary. Also see the chat room, George question of, will any of those in the IGO subgroup be at the Singapore FGF? Do we know that?
Actually, Peter, that's a really good question. Well, first of all, I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not sure that I will know the answer to that until much closer to the time, if at all. But more broadly, George and everybody, I think here's a question for the chairs and the group as well, and we don't have to decide it today, but the idea behind this pilot project was, like I said, facilitate effective outcomes. And I think the assumption was that this would be limited to working group participants discussing their work. So, for example, this type of face-to-face meeting is not listed on the public meeting schedule as an open meeting, which is what almost all ICANN sessions are, because otherwise that would turn into the normal community-facing feedback type of session. I'm not sure how the chairs and the group feel about inviting the IGO subgroup, if any of them actually happen to be at that ICANN meeting and have that extra day available. It would certainly add a different dimension. It may or may not be helpful, so it may be something to think about as we continue with the planning. I just wanted to say that this was not something that was within the assumption when this project was created. But in this particular case, if the group feels it would be helpful, it may be something to explore.
My initial personal point of view is that let's come a bit more closer to our agenda for that day, and then see if we can mix it so that we can have the main part with our participants that are already working with this topic, and maybe either on that Friday or at least during the ICANN meeting as such get inputs and hopefully have the possibility to sit down for a while with any IGO representatives. Because I fully agree that it's good to have their inputs. Then it's up to them also to decide on whether they will do it physically or more informally by written issues to us. Okay. Yes, Mary.
Yes, Peter, it's me again. Sorry, folks. But just to continue that thought from George and you, one option that may be helpful in ensuring that our group has a productive ICANN meeting generally, not just the face-to-face, is to design our community-facing session during the ICANN meeting and invite in such a way as to invite the IGO group or any of them who might be there or on the phone to come to that community session so that we can take into account that discussion when we meet a couple of days later on Friday. And as we go into the planning for the meeting in Singapore, and as most folks know, the staff is asked to put in meeting requests actually pretty much in advance. We can bear that in mind and speak to Petter and Phil about how we can best do that. So just an option to consider as well.
Thanks, Marigan. Yes, I think that's maybe the best and more practical way to do it. And then we hopefully also have getting some inputs that we can further discuss on the follow-up Friday. Okay. Then I think we are close to our full hour. I don't have any other points on the next steps, but Phil, yes, please.
Yes, Petter. As we close out the call, I just again we're not meeting next week because of it's the day before Thanksgiving in the United States. Many people are traveling that day, but let's drop for 2 weeks. Number one, again, anyone with suggested edits or additions to the letter that we've discussed today should get them to me. As soon as possible so that I can circulate a revised draft that incorporates as many suggestions as possible by the end of the week. And then I plan to use the time between now and the next meeting in 2 weeks to review all the documents in the community space with a specific focus on I think we need to start engaging on, okay, we've decided we're just focusing on IGOs. There's two key issues. There's standing. Do we need different standing than trademark rights if that's to be used? And this issue of sovereign immunity on appeals, which is being, we know the U.S. position and legal staff is trying to find out if there's any more. But I'd urge everyone just to review the documents so that we can really hit the ground running in 2 weeks and start to talk about the specifics of making the UDRP and URS work for IGOs, or whether to explore if that can be done, because if it can't be done, then we are facing the much more arduous task of creating a new completely standalone curative rights process just for them. So I'm just saying I'm planning to use the time to study up and dig deep for the future discussions, and I hope everyone else will carve out a few hours to do the same for our next call. That's all I had to say.
Thanks, Phil. I echo what you said about don't forget, and I said it also to myself. Don't forget to send out comments to Bill about that. And thanks for giving this finalizing and changes of the document so that we can have something clear for our next meeting. Okay, friends. And it seems that we have gone through the agenda of today, and although it's 4 minutes left, I think we can say thank you and looking forward to your further comments and suggestions during the week, and then we'll meet again within 2 weeks from now. Thanks.
Thank you, Petter, Phil, everybody.
Thank you so much for your team, and I'll stop the recordings. Thank you.